Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 65. What if you were irreversibly violated?
I was 14 years old, living in a small southern town of Georgia. I was a basketball star, point guard, averaging one of the highest on the team, and I wanted to go to college coming out of a poor family. Actually, I was being told that scouters were coming to look at me. I was just that good. I started when I was knee-high to a duck, when I could run and try to throw a ball, because I had older brothers, I was the youngest, and that's all they did. I was like a tomboy, and I hung out with my oldest brother, all my brothers, and he was a star in the basketball. He trained me, and I was like the female star, but I was the youngest in the family. I didn't like the female things, doing the hair, cooking in the kitchen, and stuff like that. I told my mom, I'm never getting married. I don't need to know how to cook because I'm never going to have a husband. So she couldn't get me to do anything in the kitchen. I was following my brother's tomboyish. And my father had died when I was 6 months old. And so he had married my mother. He was 20 years older than she. So actually, my mom was about 24 with five kids when he passed. And those were his five kids. And he was like 20 years older than her. So I assume he was like near 50 or something, in the late 40s, 50. And he didn't allow her to work. He just wanted her to stay home and take care of the kids. And he went out and he worked. He provided everything. But he had an asthma attack and died. And she's never worked to this day either because she's been living off that income. She got Social Security from him for all of us. And she got something for herself as well. I was 14 years old, almost 15. The coaches liked me. Everybody liked me. The teachers liked me. I had a teacher. She like adopted me, like took me to her house. And she was like schooling me for college preparatory courses. She wanted me to go to college and she was preparing me from the sixth grade. Like, you know, cause she was saying, if it didn't make it with the basketball, you gotta have some brains. And anyway, you gotta have some brains. She's teaching me. You know, was good at everything I did, you know. And my mom taught us that if anything you do, you'd be the best at it. It doesn't matter what it is. If you clean in the bathrooms, you'd be the best. If you mop in floors, make sure your floor is shining better than anybody else's floors. This particular guy, he lived 21 miles away. He would come, he had a brand new car. He was like 20, 21 years old, had a very nice job, lived in the next town. He was coming, like I say, I guess befriending my older sisters and brothers, but really watching me, you know what I mean? And then as it became my birthday, November 23rd, my mom came to me and she said, he asked me if he could take you to the movies. And she asked me if I wanted to go, and I said no. And she said, oh, he's a very nice guy, he has a nice job, he has a brand new car, this is a good fit for you, this is what you need, a young man who has a job, has a car, he could take you out, he could take care of you. And I said, so I went because my mom was hurt, so I went with him. So we were supposed to go to the movies on my birthday. And so that night, in rural Georgia, after we got out of the city limits into the rural, where it's just like darkness, he pulled down a dirt dark road and he said he wanted to have sex with me. And I said, no, no, no. I says, I'm a virgin. And what I did, I just jumped and ran. I panicked and I jumped out the car and I ran. As I started to run down the road, I look, I hold my hands up. I'm like, oh man, I can't even see my hands. It was just that dark, you know. I was scared both ways. I was out there in the dark and I was so dark I couldn't see my hands. And I was scared, just as scared being out there as I was scared to get in the car. And then he drove up beside me in the car and he said, get in, get in, get in. I'm not gonna bother you. I'm not gonna bother you. You could trust me. I say, no, I said, I can't have sex with you. I was kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. I was scared to get back in the car, but I was also scared of where I was. You know what I mean? So it was easier for him to talk nice to me and get me to get back in. It wasn't as hard because of the position he put me in. So it's easier for me to believe him that he wasn't gonna bother me and it was okay to get back in the car. So I trusted him and I got back in the car. As I got back in, he just jumped right on top of me immediately. He jumped on top of me, hold down my hands. He had already had his pants down and everything. That moment I was screaming and hollering, fighting, trying to get from him. And I was telling him, you gonna get me pregnant. I told you, I said, I'm a virgin. And he ejaculated in me and raped me. I wouldn't talk to him, I was like this. Wouldn't talk to him, wouldn't say nothing else to him, wouldn't let him touch me. So the very next morning, you know, I was so scared. And my mom, she woke up, and when we had breakfast, sitting at the table, she said, you know what? I dreamed about some freshwater fish last night. You know, she said, somebody in this house is pregnant. And then she says, well, I know it's not me. And then she looked at my oldest sister, who was like 18. She said, well, it'd be okay if it was you. That'd be all right. You already done finished school. You got your diploma. That's all I ask of y'all. So she looked at me and she said, oh, it better not be you. I told you, stay away about them little boys. So I said, no, mama, it ain't me. She said, all right, now, because you get a baby, I already done taught you. I told you. She said, day one, when you get a baby, you're going to get out of my house. You ain't going to be living here. Nah, I was scared. So from that point on, I was like petrified. After that, you know, I just start acting odd. Always acting, I would run away. I had times I would run away from home and stay. When I go into my seclusion, don't want to be around nobody, I would disappear. So from that time after I got raped, I just felt you've been wronged deeply with scars, deep scars that haunt you like every day. Like every day you dreaming, you sitting and thinking about what happened when I got raped, like reliving that moment in time, like it just happened all over again. Every day it comes back to me. You know what I mean? I have a moment between the 24 hours in a day, somewhere in between there, it gonna come back about what happened. I knew I was pregnant and I didn't tell her. You know, like the baby growing every month, stomach getting bigger and bigger. And I'm like wearing my clothes and squeezing, trying to hide it. Like in my mind, oh, my mom, she gonna put me out. I ain't gonna have nowhere to live. I can't tell my mom. You know, just petrified all the time. You know, somebody told my mom, they mentioned to her. She said, oh, you pregnant? She said, somebody told me, said, you look like you gaining weight. And she started looking at me and she said, yeah, you are pregnant. And she said, why you didn't tell me? And she said, when did all this happen? What? And I told her, he raped me. And I was scared to tell you because you know, you just think I'm out there running behind boys. And you say you were going to put me out. So I didn't tell you. And she was like, oh, she was so happy. She just hugged me and kissing all on me. Oh, you should have told me. I just told you that. I didn't really mean that. I was just saying that because I didn't want you to do that. I wanted you to get a high school diploma. But she said, now that it happened, I'm happy, you know. And she said, you ain't got nothing to worry about. I'll help you with the baby. I'll take care of the baby. You don't have anything to worry about. I still want you to do what I asked you to do. Go back to school. Get your high school diploma. Don't worry about the baby. So that's what I did. She wanted to know who, and I told her and everything. And then she said, oh, okay, that's why after he raped me, every time he came back to visit me, as I would see him come up, and I would run in the house and run, and would never talk to him, wouldn't be around him, wouldn't want to say nothing to him. And my mom said, oh, that's what was wrong with you. But anyway, she contacted him. He came to visit. What you gonna do about this baby? You the daddy. You know you gotta take care of this baby. What you gonna do? He said, yes, ma'am. I'll take up my responsibility. I'll make sure the baby get everything you need. Here, take my phone number. I guess he gave her some money. You know, after being raped like that, my personality changed. It was like a letdown to me and all my dreams and my hopes. And you know, just thought that it was all over. And got this baby, I can't leave now, and then, you know. But I went back to school. I got my diploma. In fact, I never missed one day in school. I think my mom was ashamed of what happened. I developed a certain hatred toward her. I think I blamed her for allowing me to go out like that. It was my first date. I was a virgin. She hadn't given me no birth control. She doesn't want to take any responsibility for what happened. She hasn't to this day. And I think I still blame her. And we don't get along. Me, in fact, I don't get along with none of my sisters and brothers. Because after she was born, it's like they kicked me out of the family and took her. Because they knew mentally I wasn't able to take care of her. They knew I had some mental problems after that because they were living with me and they were seeing what I was going through. I went through postpartum depression. I didn't want a baby. You know, they had to keep her away from me. I hated her. I didn't want a baby. I was sticking my fingers down my throat, trying to puke, thinking that I could get her to come up or come out, whatever. I hated being pregnant. It was the worst time of my life. And because it happened to me at a time in my life when I didn't want that, it took the pleasure and the joy that it could bring to a woman. But because it happened to me like that, it took that, took all that away. It affected my whole future. It started after the rape. I think I had got the postpartum depression, and I think it developed after that. I think my hormones changed when I got pregnant. I think all that started when I got raped, right immediately after it developed, like within months. Like I said, I didn't want to start not wanting to be around people. For one, because of what was going on with me. I was trying to hide it, you know what I mean? And it developed from that, the panic attacks. At that time, I guess that's where my personality changed. When I was traumatized, and I was having PTSD, and I was still panic over any little thing, because at that moment in time, I panicked and I ran. And I've been doing all of those things now to this day. The only reason I birthed her was because my mom raised us that we don't have abortions. I gave it to my mom, but my mom still held me financially responsible for the child. So she was draining the father, she was draining the system. So the end result of all of that is that I don't get along with anybody in my family. I don't have a relationship with my daughter. I never really did. She grew up with my mom telling her that I don't want her. But instead of telling her why and telling her the result, what happened and what led to that, she just telling the young girl, your mama don't want you. Your mama don't want you. That's what she grew up telling her. But I did take care of her financially. My mom kept making me feel like I had a financial responsibility toward her. So I sent my mom money and did different things for her. I would come back and visit on the weekends to see her when she was a baby, till she was like about 2 years old, or till she was about five. And my mom said when she got five that she would let her come and live with me, because I had moved to Florida. When she became five and I came back to get her, my mom wouldn't let her come. She was like, oh, she doesn't want to come and be with you. So I let her stay. She would allow me come and visit her over the years. We had like a distant kind of like relationship. I lost the skills to interact with people. To be honest with you, I developed a promiscuity. I wanted to get back at men when I was young. I would just be the girl for the moment, you know, the minute, the hour, the day, and then I got to go. You know, don't try to love me, don't try to hold on to me. And didn't want to be around folks, as I said. If I was around, I didn't want to be around no females. If I was around any men, I was just use men, abuse men, no love. But I also learned that you can't live in this world alone. You know, you're gonna need somebody sometime in your life, another. When I came back to play basketball, I couldn't shoot no more like I used to after I had a baby. I didn't come back to where I was before. I never went back to scout material. So I had to rely on what the other lady told me, remember? She said, you gotta use your brains. I went to college, I was very smart still. I was more like a geek. I taught myself computers, to fix computers, build computers, network, operating systems. But what happened is, once I studied and got all my 10 years of studying, and when I got all my credentials and went to work, I found out I was confused. That's when I learned I was bipolar. I was going through lapses. That's when I really knew that I was having confusion, because my hands and my brains, they don't work together. So my brains are doing one thing and my fingers are doing the other thing. And maybe my brains are trying to tell my fingers what to do, but my fingers want to do something else. I didn't know I had problems, but I did everything to the extreme. One of my boyfriend's boss man, he came over to our house and he seen all this computer stuff all over the floor. You know, I had a table with about 5 computers on top of the table, the screen on the table and the bottom pieces on the floor and wires all over the place. But actually said, my hands and my brains, they didn't work together. It was okay when I was home running wires, because I could be there for days on one thing stuck and it was okay. But it couldn't be like that on the boss man job. And see, you get like, you know, it's like calls where people in a company, computers are broke. So you got to go to their desk and fix it. Your job is get them back up and running. You ain't got all day. I go there, sit up at the desk. And then that's when I realize my brains know what to do, but my daggone hands won't do it. And then they don't coordinate. And now I'm confused. And I'm like just sitting at the screen stuck, can't move, you know. And the coworkers and the people were noticing that, and they started complaining to the boss man. So I had a life of 1,000 jobs. The shorter the job was, the better it was for me. You know what I mean? I was able to do that, you know, because most of those, they had all the instructions written out. It was a project. I could talk that talk. I done read all them big books, yay high 10 times each. I was a Microsoft certified systems engineer. I had an associate's degree in computer information systems. So then I said, I can't do no engineering. I said, I'm going to do break fix. So that's when I started, you know, fixing computers. The people liked me, you know, they would hire me. When I get in and I start working, I can't work. I can't fix the damn computers. Trying to do it and learn it before the boss man could find out that I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And a lot of times I got by and a lot of times I didn't. But I had to eat, and bills still had to be paid. And as I said, I could always talk that talk, but walking that walk was always a different story. So I finally gave up. I got tired. I wasn't a team person. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I didn't want nobody to talk to me. I couldn't stand be around myself, let alone be around somebody else. So imagine in your mind when you can't stand to be around you. And that's like unimaginable. But I go through that. I've tried to commit suicide a couple times in my life. You know, sometimes I fall very, very low, and sometimes I be too high. You know, I think I could fly, you know, and then sometimes I think I should be dead. I have personalities that draw people to me, and then I have another personality that runs them away from me. This is the way I describe myself. I say I'm like a turtle. A snapping turtle is like, once he put his head inside, don't ever touch him, don't get too close to him. If he feels your body, he'll snap at you and bite you, you know what I mean? So I'm like this, I'm in a shell, I come out and I peep my head out and I look around and I inch out and I inch out until I get all the way out. And when I'm all the way out, I'm like at my highest peak and I'm at a dangerous level. You know what I mean? Because I could do something crazy. Like my mind at that point tells me I could do things that I can't do. My bipolar can go into schizophrenia if it get to the severity. Then I start hearing voices. And the voices start telling me that I could fly. And the voices start telling me I could do things that I can't do. And that's what the medication does. It comes to me and it says, hey, you can't do that. You know what I mean? It talks to me because somebody else is talking to me too. Telling me to hurt people, you know, stab them with the knife, or stab myself with the knife in my throat when I get to my lows. Oh, you'd be better off dead. Just take the knife, stab it in your throat, you'd be okay. That same turtle, he withdraws and he comes back slowly, slowly, slowly. Over time, he comes back into the shell. So this is how my bipolar is. When I get back into my shell, don't talk to me. I could commit suicide, or I could try, or I could try to hurt somebody or make somebody hurt me, because I'm at that level, I'm aggressive. At that point, people don't understand. So me, I run away. And I've been running all my life. Whether I'm extremely low or extremely high, when I'm not on medication, or there are times that before I became medicated, taking some pills a couple times, tried to drink too much alcohol a couple times. I had like a long machete knife like that one time, and I was seeing things in my mind, what it'd be like to just chop my friend up in like a million little pieces. Thank God I got help before I was able to do any all of that. I just was off my meds. Now recently, I had having all these visions and, you know, these thoughts and crazy thoughts. And I got so sick, I got so down. I isolated myself for like 40 days, wouldn't talk to nobody. And somehow, I guess, out of that isolation, I decided to get back on my medication. I've been in therapy, and then through therapy the last year, I realized that it wasn't my fault. I realized that all these years that I took the blame, I allowed my mother to put the blame on me for what had happened, and I had lived like I was blaming myself. And so then what I did is I told my daughter the truth, which she never knew, that she was a product of a rape, you know, that, you know, all that, what my mom was telling her. At least she could have told her the beginning of how all that came about, you know, that she was put there against my will. And I never adjusted to that will. And I only went through with it because of my religion. I called her on the phone and told her. She said, don't worry about it. She said, don't worry about it. And I let her know how I was affected by it. A result, you know, after I went through therapy and got all my diagnosis on the medication, and for some reason, after the therapy, I started to feel better. I think I was like blaming my mom, but I think my therapist told me I shouldn't have been blaming my mom. But I was telling my mom it was her fault. I think my therapist was telling me, like, don't bring that up, don't say anything like that to my mom. But I felt like the truth should come out. Everybody should know the truth. And they could come up with their own opinion about how they feel about the situation. But it wasn't that I just walked away from her and I didn't want her, but that she, because she was a product of a rape, I didn't want the child. All them years, I think I was ashamed and I kind of kept it hidden and secreted because of my mom's beliefs. She was more ashamed of it. She wanted it to make it look like I met this nice guy and he had a nice job, a nice car, and he could take care of me, and she wanted me to marry him, and, you know, she wanted to look like a pretty thing, but it wasn't that. So instead of putting him in jail for what he did, she wanted him to stay out where she could get that from him. You know what I mean? She was more concerned about the money because, see, remember, I was 15. In 2-3 more years, she wasn't gonna be getting no more money from her children. Because remember, she had 5 kids. She got a check, $200-something a month for each one of us. I was the last one. She brushed it up under the carpet and tried to make it look sweet and pretty like, and that's what she wanted everybody to think. And I never really got an understanding about it until I went into therapy. I've been on therapy a year, going talk therapy to a psychologist, just sit and talk about me, anything I want to talk about for an hour. And what I came to grips was that it wasn't my fault, that my daughter deserves to know the truth about what happened. All my older sisters and brothers, they never knew it. They claimed they never knew it. To be honest with you, I put it on Facebook too. I said, you know what, I'm going to put it out there, because everybody in my town knew that I had a daughter and stuff, but nobody never ever knew the truth. Everybody was blaming me, had gave me a bad reputation. I don't know, after therapy, it just dawned on me. I started to feel so much better. And I did. I told her the truth, and my mom got mad. My whole family got mad because all the people in my hometown, they all got to know the truth. And then people were like, oh, so this why this happened. People go, oh, you know. When I turned 50, I'm 50 now. I turned that in November. That's when I told everybody the truth about my daughter. And I've been happy. It's like I'm free. I'm not ashamed anymore. I'm not hiding the truth anymore because I set myself free. And my daughter was hurt. My mom called, oh, she been crying and crying for days. She been crying. Well, mama, you shouldn't have lied to her from the beginning. Okay, your lie from the beginning. You know what I mean? Shameful family secrets that people hold and try to put the blame on somebody else in the family to make themselves look good. No, I say, mama, I'm not gonna let you take it to your grave. You won't take the truth to your grave, not the lie that you've been living all these years hiding behind the truth. But the truth is out, you know, take it or leave it. Now, and also, if you still want to blame me and say I ran off and left my daughter and I didn't want her, well, go ahead and do that too, knowing that what the real truth behind it is. I'll take that too. It was something that I kept inside. It was like a disease that could eat you up, like a cancer. I can't stop hoping and dreaming that I could get back to be regular person that I used to be. I still gotta work towards that, whether that ever happens again or it doesn't. But I can't give up on myself. Hey, I live for me now. I'm 50, and when I turn 50, I live for me. I'm not ashamed anymore about anything that happened. I don't blame myself anymore. It's all about me.